Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy. Hello, everybody. I have another amazing guest ready for your listening pleasure in today's episode of Private Practice Made Perfect. Kerry Weaver is sitting through the little white light with me. Kerry is the owner of a business called Eyes and Independence. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathy, for inviting me.
Oh, all good. So this isn't a job interview. So this is just about the business awesome part. So we'll find our way. Tell us about why you started Eyes at Independence.
Okay, well, my background is in teaching, in special education, and have trained in vision impairment. Mm. And I have then done a couple of other things since then, in early childhood, and also a master's in human services, which I specialised in orientation and mobility. Mm. And people might have more of an understanding of this by the end of this.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, yeah, I've worked in government jobs as in that kind of role as an itinerant teacher, and in a couple of different states, Melbourne, Tasmania, and then Queensland. And yeah, I really moved for those positions because it's an area where when they really need people, they're hard to get. Mm. But then also if you want to stay in that field and there's no positions, you have to really go to where the positions are. So that's what I did, a bit of a run around like that. And then I came to Queensland and did my regional time, country service, and all in the area of blind and vision impaired, and as an itinerant teacher, which is travelling from school to school or community centre to community centre. And childcare centre, kindergarten, that type of thing, supporting children from birth through to 18 under the school system, really. Mm. And then I had a pretty devastating experience where the government and the made decisions to change some of the structuring of services and decided they were going to cut down on numbers of visiting teachers, one which I never even expected, because they were going to still maintain our field in vision impairment, and but all had to apply for our own jobs, and several of us didn't get them back. And
wow,
in those positions. And
when was this, Kerry?
This was 2013.
Okay.
And it was in the North Coast region, and totally unexpected, not really knowing who it was likely to happen to. And basically the ones of us that did lose our positions were all highly qualified, had been in the profession for at least over 20 years, and we were the ones that were chosen to not get the position back. So prior to that, I had been looking into sort of going privately if things were to change, and Better Start, which was a funding source some time ago now, but for 0 to 7s for kids with sensory impairments. I had looked into that process, and that took a while, but I actually got accepted and was the first person in Australia as a special education teacher in vision impairment to be certified or come under the social services department and approved to do those services. So when I lost my position, they wanted to send me off to anywhere else they could find a hole, which they did for about 18 months, and that was as a special ed teacher. But I could do the job but I didn't like their philosophy. And kept saying, I want to be back in vision impairment. And I would say there wasn't a much support in me being able to do that. And in the end, they really gave me no other ultimatum and I had to resign. So
so you had the business sort of little bit of business interest sitting there.
Yeah, I did. And I think because for a long time, we all know that government can restrict things in what you want to do and even in the hours that you want to work. So, you know, previously, you know, you've only got that 9 to 3 that you can work within and it's not regarded highly if you work over those hours or, you know, we know that you don't get paid for it. But, you know, you only had kind of like 3 sessions in the day. You could go in and see a person and provide supports. You'd probably do one of those sessions and then you'd be on the road again to the next. So I guess I wanted to provide, I was very keen to look at a service where I could provide how I thought it should be done. Yeah. Based on my experience of like almost 25 years at that time and and wanting to provide a quality service and different to what other people provided and I guess sort of honing on my specialty areas and focus on the person and not be there just, you know, for the number but there for actually, you know, for the child to learn. So going into that business, I did start with just children under the Better Start source of funding, but as a orientation and mobility specialist, I'm qualified, you know, to support adults as well. And I'd always worked in the area of disability, like from a very young age with adults too. So, it's now from 0 to 99. So that's how I kind of went into it. I
fell out of one and fell into the next.
Yeah. And I did do some contract work under a couple of the blindness organisations and then, they wanted to employ their people and I was really more qualified than what they were offering as the going rate too, which is something people don't really realise. But I've never sort of done it for the money, but I knew that I would have more flexibility if I could do it myself. So that's how I sort of went into it.
Gather around, dear listeners, for a moment of sheer audio delight. You may have heard, but we love to chat with Allied Health business owners. We get inspired hearing about your aspirations, the challenges you face, the roadblocks that get in your way, and business realities. So we invite you to book a free power call with a Naker Consulting business specialist, regardless of where you're at in business. Maybe you're feeling overwhelmed or overworked or overjoyed. We're here for you, and we'll meet you exactly where you are, judgment-free. It's okay to book a second or even a third call. We're always keen to hear all your news. Book a free power call with us today at naker.com.au/free-power-call. Let's get the convo ball rolling. Now it's time to get back to our regularly scheduled banter.
In the allied health business world, it's harder than you think to stay on top of everything you need to do to run a business whilst being fully present for your team and clients. If you struggle with this, you're not alone. Pretty much everybody feels this way. Some days you feel like you're crossing a decent task off just to be reminded that you then have 3 new tasks to take at their place. The to-do list feels like it never ends. It can be overwhelming doing it all on your own, and that is why we took it upon ourselves to reach out to help you out. We have created our monthly masterclasses so that you can join and connect with others, learn bite-sized business skills, and best of all, walk away from our masterclass with tasks ticked off your list. We can guarantee that each session will provide you with at the very least 5 gems that you can take and put into action right there and then. And trust us, as soon as you hop off our short and sweet session, you will want to take immediate action because that is the effect that Kathy Love and these masterclasses have. Each masterclass tackles a topic that has been niggling in the back of your mind and has moved further and further down your list. However, the sooner you nip this in the bud, the sooner you will free up your time and see the results in your business. Ready to nip your business woes in the bud and start taking practical action to maximize your results this year? Join one of our monthly masterclasses today.
It's interesting, your motivations are so similar to so many other people I speak with, that wanting a bit of flexibility, wanting to provide a quality service, wanting to really partner with clients to kind of get the outcomes that they want, and that in order to achieve those goals, they've got to do it themselves.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, I really like the idea of, it sounds probably a bit crazy to some, but of working on Saturdays as well, because you get someone who's recovered or recovering from the week, but also just in more of a relaxed style and probably a bit more willing to learn, but open to doing a range of things on a Saturday, if you know what I mean.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was doing a lot of Saturdays for a few years there, and if I didn't have a Saturday to do, I'd kind of say, think to myself, you know, what am I doing now?
Where's my life gone? Where's my life?
I do have to watch that a bit.
Yeah. Do you work long hours in your business now?
Yeah, I do. My husband would say I just work all the time. Mm-hmm. I do work long hours because some of the longer hours, I guess, are things that I don't get paid for, but I have to maintain my website, my Facebook page, you know, the invoicing, the dreaded invoicing, the planning and timetabling and all that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have probably got a little bit better more recently in justifying that, you know, I could have a couple of hours off catching up with a friend during the day because, you know, I've got some people to see at 4 o'clock this afternoon or, you know, so
bringing
I sort of
that flexibility motivation. You've got to make it work.
And I definitely disciplined myself. I would feel guilty if I had too many days off, you know, but I know that's my own guilt. But if I'm doing a good job, I know that I can justify you having a bit of time being a bit flexible, you know.
Yeah.
So, yep. But yeah.
I remember doing an exercise with my accountant decades ago when we actually worked out that the hours that I worked, that I was really working and what my real hourly rate was, not the rate I was billing out, but my real hourly rate. And I, as I say that, I'm going back to a visual of sitting in his office, looking out the window, sitting with the calculator. He was working it out on the whiteboard and it was confronting. Let it be said. Yes. Yeah. Let it be said.
Yeah, well, I know that before sort of working out how I needed to work, my husband and I sort of did some figures and he's saying, oh, you've got to have this many clients and this many clients to see per week. And it's like, well, no, I don't, because I may see a client for 3 hours on some occasions, you know, so it's not actually the number of clients. It's just looking at the hours and if it's ever going to equate to the teacher wage that I was on, you know. And luckily now, you know, I've reached that, but that took a while. But, yeah, it's at least now, I guess, thanks to NDIS, I can do a couple of hours and that's okay if I only do a couple of hours that day. You know, but I just sort of need to keep being consistent in what I can do.
Mm.
But I know too, I recently went down to Melbourne for just a bit of a sort of a trip for family reasons. And, I caught up on a bit of invoicing and, you know, I didn't take the whole load with me, but I certainly took
Please do the invoicing. Please do the invoicing.
Yes, yes.
At least weekly.
Yeah. And it's to my own detriment because, you know, I've always left myself to last when it comes to, you know, logging the kilometres and getting the payback on those things. So I've got to discipline myself a bit more there.
Discipline's such a good word for it. It's about figuring out the core duties that the owner of the business has to do. And in this case, you're doing all of the things and then, you know, pretty much getting them into your calendar that the invoicing gets done Friday 4 o'clock or whenever it is. And
I think I should, I think I need to do that more to have a set day because it just sort of depends on what I'm doing. And I guess I do a multitude of things.
Mm-hmm.
So my role is different. It can be different every day. I could spend, you know, a day doing support coordination work, which is very piecey. So, you know, I might be doing 15 minutes for someone there and then I do a half hour and then I do a phone call. And so all those sorts of things, I write things down on different sheets for those files. But, yeah, it is hard to sometimes get into a consistent, okay, this day I'm going to be doing invoicing.
But, and I guess some business owner duties are more consistent than others, you know. There are definitely some weekly, fortnightly, monthly kind of tasks that you've got to do. Let's go back to when the business started. What did you learn about business in those first 2 or 3 years?
I think I learned a little bit about business prior to that in the sense that I actually was recovering from major surgery and wanted a project, being the workaholic that I am. And I started doing website training, and it was actually via the States at that time. I think I might
have been nocturnal.
Yes. And they were actually phone calls too, which was really interesting. I used to do about 2 or 3 phone calls a week, and I paid, I think, a few thousand to do the training. But the training actually went for like 6 months, and they would give me homework and I'd have to do things before I could, you know, chat to them again, that kind of thing. So I actually learned a bit about business, I guess, that way, because we also did get to sort of like the point of online shopping and, you know, putting products on and talking about
e-commerce. Yep.
Yeah. And talking about my business and my goals and how to write to that. So I guess that was a really good learning experience. And there was a few little glitches I think were a bit challenging because of the fact that I was doing it through the States and sort of just, you know, the understanding of services and how they're provided. Yep. In the beginning, I attended a lot of business network meetings and a lot of I did some Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, cool.
Breakfast things I went to. Actually, it's amazing when you're not working on a regular 9-to-5 weekdays when you realise that there's so much else going on during the week, like things that you can attend. Yep. And so I found that really, really useful for networking because I've always been a really strong advocate for networking. Mm-hmm. And I attended a lot of those sorts of things. Some weren't that appropriate for me for what I did. Yeah. You know, I really going to the breakfast and sitting amongst the real estate agents and the accountants and the lawyers weren't really my thing. But then it's kind of finding the group that does suit more that has always been specifically more service providers, like in the area of disability or understanding, you know, the allied health area. I found that was really good preparation. I haven't got a business, you know, certificate or degree or anything. I've sort of learnt that as I've gone along, and I think I've managed that pretty well. But I think, you know, I've always debated on, you know, getting an admin person. I did have an admin person for some periods of time, and I actually took on somebody under the DES scheme, so someone who hadn't worked in the system for, you know, 13 years, came back and did work for me, and now she's off on her own doing things, so that's great. I'm a very strong advocate for, like, employing people who are needing work, who've got the skills but are not, you know, being probably equitably considered for jobs due to their disabilities. I found, though, Facebook and using Facebook has definitely been a big thing, and I did do blogs for a long time. I actually committed to doing a blog every Sunday night, which was, in the end, so much pressure on me, I couldn't believe why I was doing it. And this guy who was helping me with my website sometimes, you know, said to me, why are you doing that every week? It's like, I don't know. That's just what I've set myself to do. But they were being read. But I must admit, you know, most of my clients that I have and how I've had referrals has really been word of mouth. And so I think, you know, I know we can all spend so much time on social media platforms and, you know, spending time on making the website look good. But, the majority has really been word of mouth. And I guess the ironic thing about that is that, you know, the job that I lost after years of supporting particular students, and sometimes you're sort of on part of their continuum because they're not being enough around, you know, they've come back to me. You know,
there you go.
And I sort of have to laugh at, you know, the my previous
the opportunity employer. that transition has provided for everybody.
Yeah. So which is really nice. And I still have people, you know, saying, oh, look, you know, we're really looking for somebody who knows what they're on about. You know, we want you to come and work with someone.
Yeah. I love those phone calls. I pick them up every so often. And it starts with, look, you probably don't remember us, but I'm so-and-so. And by the time they've got to that point, you usually know exactly who they are. Occasionally, I really need my memory prodded. But I've found it lovely over the years, just wonderful over the years to get those random calls. Someone I saw when they were 6 who now needs something for year 12 or university or what have you. So
I support people now who I knew since they were 2 before, and you know, now they're some are even 30 or 35.
So, yeah,
have I keeping really been around
young,
that long?
Keeping you young.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
In those first couple of years, it was sorting out your online presence, blogging, getting the hang of Facebook, and I guess showing up on online, and also connecting with other business owners and networking.
Yeah.
What about the client work and the billing and the documents and all of that? That can be pretty steep.
Yes, yes. In the beginning, it's funny, I can't actually really remember how I did the invoicing in the beginning. I must have just done my own like template sheet, but then I did engage with an app that I now use. I'm not sure if I can say
why not?
Was. So I've been associated with Invoice2Go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I signed up with them, and because invoicing wasn't really something that I really knew much about. But that's kind of worked really well. It's fairly automatic. I know that once I get to them, I can do them quickly. You know, obviously they have glitches too and takes time, but and I know it does have the option of me, like I can basically do one as soon as I've seen a client if I'm not driving, you know, but I don't tend to do that, although I could. What else did you ask me about? So I set up definitely having my own bank account for just business has been great.
Gold.
Great for my accountant. I just have
couldn't
to
agree more.
Statements.
Absolutely essential.
You know, she does the best stuff, and I just hand over the things, and she knows what, you know, different items mean. I think certainly if I wasn't able to be paid under Betterstart or NDIS, you know, I may not have a business. And at least through payments in that way, I'd say I've got a fairly good idea of how that all gets paid, and I can, you know, follow how that's all being done most of the time. So I guess, lots of paperwork. I developed my own database, I guess, of clients. I still could benefit from learning a bit more of that type of thing that would maybe make the process quicker.
Yeah.
Because I'm probably a bit slow on the admin. I'd rather be out there with people, basically. But
understandable. Yeah.
And that's the thing. I hate spending too much time on the admin side if I could be out there. But then also it's hard to find if I, you know, was employing someone all the time for them to understand what I'm needing or what my job entails. So, yeah, but and I guess because it's a real specialty area, it's hard to find someone who knows the job if I needed an offsider to actually for them to have those sorts of skills as well. And I probably have fairly high standards in who I would get to, you know, to work alongside me. But I definitely, through all my networking and everything, have found I've developed a list myself of who I would refer people to that I like and can recommend, you know.
Yeah, Good admin or customer service support is often a bit of a game changer for you to be able to hand things over and know that there's systems documented and training in place and that they know what to do with the task. It can absolutely help you reclaim your time, but not saying it's always easy to find that human, whether it's a real life human who you meet with or whether it's an online human. It's a really great skill set and a great asset to have in your team.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have had some good people and but I have found, and as you said too, it's kind of trusting that person but knowing what you can leave them with. And I guess it takes a while to sort of understand the role. So I felt in the past that having someone, I've sort of been here for that too. It's probably something that I, you know, was aiming to not be here for. But that's just sort of how it panned out at the time, you know.
Yeah, sometimes you can underestimate how long it's going to take to onboard someone. Mm. And we sort of think we'll give them a good 2 weeks and really that's just getting started.
Absolutely.
It's the next probably 25 weeks that are highly relevant.
That's right. Well, especially
a whole lot of
only,
assumptions. Yeah.
Yeah, especially if they're only doing like 2 days a week or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got to multiply that that out. So the NDIS has sort of opened up the business doors for you. What are your thoughts on the NDIS? Bear in mind the portfolio has just been picked up yesterday by our next person,
which I'm really hopefully pleased about.
Let's go there. What do you reckon? I've been talking about this all morning with people, let's just continue. What do you think? So what are we up to? It's the 1st of June we're recording this, and Bill Shorten has just picked up the portfolio. What do you reckon?
Well, I know that I've listened to his, ideas before and some of his discussions to do with NDIS, and I really quite like his attitude towards all that. I'm not a real political person, but I certainly would like to have a chat with him personally.
What would you say? What would you ask him?
I can't probably tell you. I suppose he's aware of a lot of issues with NDIS that haven't yet been resolved or are taking a very long time. Yeah. And I'd probably like to share some examples of the real things that I guess have happened to me or my business that has affected the functioning of people, of how they can function or how they're supported to see whether people can get onto things quicker or the processes are being followed correctly or timely for people to, I guess, gain success in where they want to go with their goals and achieve. I find some days I can't stand even thinking about NDIS. I actually made a business decision that as of 2 o'clock Friday, I definitely don't ring NDIS. But I also decided that I wasn't going to have a lot of interaction with people or phone calls after two on a Friday because
love it.
Every Friday for so many weeks, I had disasters happen. And, and a lot of the time it might have been waiting to get through, to the call centres to then be told no one's here or they're working from home and this doesn't happen and no, you're wrong. And and then, I don't know, everyone gets very tense on a Friday. And I just thought, no, this is ridiculous. It's every Friday afternoon this happens. And so now I've actually changed on my details of my business that Friday is till two.
I completely salute you.
Saturdays are a completely different thing. But
No one's going to answer the phone at the NDIS on a Saturday probably.
That's right. But, so I guess as far as the NDIS goes, I think the intention's been good. I'm certainly one to believe in people who make decisions should have the background and understanding of things before they make the decision. And I don't believe that has been done really well, especially for those who have been the first point of contact. And I know that's not their fault, but I think that has created a lot of problems initially.
Yeah.
I don't believe still that a person with a vision impairment or is blind is understood by NDIS. I think there's still a long way to go in that realm. I can't see why they have to question why a person with low vision who has to sit two centimetres to the screen should have postural problems and therefore needs a physio. There's questions on those sorts of things so often about, they're blind, what's that got to do with their disability? And that sort of thing really frustrates me because the effect of vision loss is huge on all areas of learning
all and development. Systems, yeah.
And, from birth, if it's from birth, and then when it's not from birth and it's acquired, even more so then, things have to change so much that, all domains of...
It's a more holistic view.
Yeah, absolutely, because I just find that so frustrating. And I know, and I really honestly believe in the beginning, when looking at people's plans for the vision impaired people, their plans were so, so much lower than anyone else's. And I know you're not to compare because everyone's needs are different, but I really put that down to them not being understood and also not knowing what they have to ask for. Or how to present themselves,
Yeah.
So I found that really yeah, very frustrating.
Mm. Anything else you'd ask? Bill Shorten, you got him. Cup of tea.
I guess I'd like to know not know the process, but I'd like to see the process of complaints and cases that go to the fraud task force, for those cases to be acted on quicker than what I believe they are, as I think a lot of people, you know, have been affected by people doing the wrong thing. And a lot of it, and a lot of them, you know, there's still been no resolve for a lot of people. And I know that kind of personally, and still kind of thinking, well, why haven't they
sorted
the case out, you know? I'd really like to know how that sort of operates, or how they judge when it's time to catch someone out, when there've been reports put forward and information provided, but
seemingly no action.
Yeah. Yep. So that's one of my things that, you know, has kind of affected me personally in our business, in my business too. And I don't understand why the wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So. If you were boss of the price guide.
Yeah.
We both reach for our cups of tea for those listening along. If you were boss of the price guide, what would you do?
I would lower the rate on support workers in some instances, depending on what their credentials and qualifications are. I think that's become an area where people initially, like people who have gone independent as support workers, who think that they can, who do choose to charge the maximum recommended NDIS rate of $55 or $57 when they've done a CPR course and, maybe not much else, and think that being a support worker will be a cruisy time and, a good way of earning money as opposed to working at a coffee shop. And I'm not putting down anyone who works in a coffee shop. Support workers I look for, and I've had to look for in my role to find someone who gets it, but also someone who's there for the right reasons. And I know that the Mabel platform that I've sort of known about since early on, you know, when you used to look at that at the support worker rates, they would range from about 25 to 40 an hour. Now when you look, nearly everyone thinks they're entitled and can get that 55 an hour. And this is where people don't understand. When I said before, I was working for blindness organisations as a maybe orientation mobility specialist or, you know, coordinating some sort of services, the rates that we get, and we're, and I was qualified, I have several qualifications, we were getting 35 an hour. Now, I can't see how a support worker can actually be, you know, that they can approve for a support worker to get that rate, especially if they don't have the credentials. And so that's probably, you know, and some support workers might be listening to this and think, well, we do this and we do that. And, you know, it's like, well, yeah, I've probably done all that too. But I think those prices are pretty high. And I think it's pretty tough because the NDIS aren't really, they're providing lots of support and lots of support work hours for people, but I just hope it's being used the right way. The rest of the price guide, well, I know parts of it and I'm astounded by some, but I think some of it is justified. But I think the one thing I would probably consider changing would be when you look at the regional rates or the more remote area. It's very hard to provide a support to somebody who, say, lives 10 hours away, for the provider to justify that travel, but also for that person to actually get the services they need. And I don't believe that's factored into their planning, into the plan. So, but even like I travelled to Kingaroy in Queensland, which is about 2.5 hours. You know, I go up to Gympie and Gladstone sometimes as well. But those people's plans haven't got that extra money to really cover those costs, and which I think is really unfair. And so I know that there's certain components that you can add for travel or you can negotiate, but I'm never one to ask for too much, but I need to cover my own costs as well.
But I just
think it's very unfortunate that in some instances a lot of travel money has to be taken out of the money that they need for the specialty supports or the core supports or to provide the right, you know, the right provider.
So back to that planning process.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That holistic view of what the participant needs.
Yeah, and when there's been rises in rates, you know, if they've increased the rate, that hasn't increased on their plan.
Yeah.
And it's not an automatic thing. I think it was automatic at one stage, but it might have been to do with the what's the yearly tax increase, is it?
CPI.
Yeah, yeah. But I know at one stage I think there was an extra money put in, but I haven't seen that so much to kind of justify suddenly why these people have to pay this for travel.
Yeah.
You know, so I really feel for the regional areas.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, Bill is in for quite a conversation. I'm going to urge you to contact him regardless.
Yes, well, he has found me on LinkedIn, which I found interesting, but I hope that's because he's heard good things.
I'm sure it is. So, you know, at times you do have to make some noise in different areas to kind of facilitate some change. So go for it.
All for that. I think I don't really hold back, but I probably have got better at expressing my thoughts in a more acceptable way.
Yep.
but you know, sort of stating the facts. And if I've ever been pulled up on things in the past in different jobs, I've always been told, you know, we understand why you said that, because we know that your main concern is for the client.
Yeah.
You know? So if it's an issue that I've said, hey, how come this hasn't happened? It's been because I've been concerned about the person that I've been supporting, you know. So I take credit to that.
Motivated for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
Changing gears a little, we've got a few minutes left. What do you want to achieve in your business in the next 12 months?
I guess I like continuity, but also I would like, I guess it's, understanding what my business does, what I can provide. I guess I want it to be running smoothly and I guess transparently, and I guess acknowledge for what I can offer without the people who don't understand questioning me about how can I do that or what are your qualifications or your credentials, you know, what for the NDIS understanding that my service is different to other services as well. I'm not the standard kind of therapist that people know about as such.
Yeah.
Most of the people in my field, well, if they've got the dual qualification of teaching and orientation mobility, they would still be working with the government. There has been independent providers go out as orientation mobility specialists. But I think what I can offer is probably more of a whole approach as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where I can actually provide a service and address, you know, someone doesn't have to wait 3 months for an organisation to come and teach them how to write an email, you know, with their new computer
and
software. I can actually do that too while I've, you know, after we've gone for a walk and I've trained them with the cane or, you know, we've orientated them to the new workplace. So, yeah, I guess it's being understood, and also the actual title of an orientation mobility specialist has never been put on NDIS paperwork up until very recently in February, where they acknowledged that AT supports can also be other people outside of OTs. And
well, OT barely makes the line.
Yes. So this has been one of my real bugbears, because it seems a very standard thing that every plan says there's money for OT assessments and, you know, get an OT, get a speech therapist and off you go. And I don't agree with that, because there's so many other people that can provide other supports that may actually have more knowledge in the area of specialties and specialised disability that, yeah, our field get forgotten. And some people who would read that plan literally think they have to go and employ an OT to do a functional assessment with no particular reason for an outcome at that time. It's been kind of like a standard thing. And I think this is where the people just think an OT, everyone needs an OT. And I know your practice, your platform, you know, has a lot of OTs that are part of this. But I've worked with a lot of OTs. I've always, you know, worked very well alongside OTs. But I also know there's only so much they've learnt at uni. And, you know, I think I know sometimes they're sort of thrown in the deep end, not really knowing, say, the specialty in vision impairment and the kinds of equipment they could delve into depending on their background. And I just find that I can do a lot of that stuff, and I don't think that's always regarded by other people as good as, or, you know, if that makes sense.
So I guess it's about what I would sort of describe as positioning your authority in the market and really messaging the value and the ultimate value of partnering with other allied health professionals as well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The experience that then provides for the participant.
Yeah, and I certainly have had referrals from OTs, and they've probably been people that I have worked alongside in the past. But the one real big issue that's still gone on for a number of years is the orientation mobility title, for example, to actually be there as an option in the list of the allied health providers, because up until that's on the system for them to tick a box to say this is what you might need, we might be mistakenly called OTs, but also totally forgotten. But we are the ones that will assist those people to get to the workplace travel-wise. And it's not transport training. It's not teaching them about buses. It's specialised work that we've all been qualified to do, you know.
It's another flavour of marketing, isn't it?
Yep,
It still comes under the marketing and broadcasting and whatever word you want. It's about messaging out the value that you in your business provide alongside everybody else.
And I probably do really try and focus on those areas too, to say, hey, I can do this, and here's an example of me having done this.
Yeah. You know,
but sometimes we want it to get to the powers to be as well.
Yeah.
You know, for them to understand. So, yeah.
All righty.
That answered that 12-month question, but.
Oh, you get there in the end, hey? You've got the talking stick for the last minute. What would you like kind of allied health educator business owners to think about as your parting words?
I guess to be open to who else is out there to provide services, and to also network with each other, not just go separately, you know, and that, you know, I can be part of someone else's supports, and we can all work as a team. I guess I'm probably more a team player, even though, like, I'm working as a sole provider. And I've had, you know, I've spent time in teams, and it's been so valuable because you come with a wealth of experience. And I think we have to keep working towards getting quality people to work for everybody, and whether they're under a service on its own or under a big organisation. But I think there needs to be training. Training is a really big thing for the support workers. They need training to understand vision impairment. The organisations, the bigger organisations that want to engage or say that they can provide supports to vision impaired people, well, what kind of training have they got to say that they can do that? And I think that's something I find at expos that I go to. They'll say, oh, we can provide support, you know, for your services. It's like, okay, how much training have you done with vision impairment? Oh, we've got that one client who's 70 who's going blind. You know, it's like, well, that might not be enough. But recently I trained up some support workers. There was 5 in my group, which was a great number actually. They loved it, and they're coming back for part 2. And that's what I'm actually trying to promote in the next 12 months to a lot more training for support workers, because I'm not going to refer a support worker unless I know they've got some kind of background or some interest and learning and training that they've done in vision impairment.
Yeah.
So I still kind of really fight for that field, you know, which is a low incidence disability, and that's why sometimes people don't understand it. But at the same time, there's lots of people out there, you know, that have got a vision impairment that need to be understood as well.
Yeah, and supported appropriately.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing a little bit about your business adventure and your wholehearted commitment to people with visual impairment.
Vision.
Thank you, thank you.
Vision.
What did I say? Visual impairment.
A lot of people,
it's absolutely vision impairment. Couldn't agree.
Is,
couldn't agree more.
So cool. That's all good.
Thank you for calling me. Good. All righty.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
All right.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.